I did a lot of shady shit. Or as I like to say, a lot of fun shit in Japan. He had 3 fingers on each hand cut off. Don't go to Roppongi alone and go drinking, or else you'll end up without panties and raped. What is up, everybody? This is Some Dumb Gaijin with the dumbest, stupidest gaijin there is, JJ Walters. So you know what? I've been having a lot of traction on one of my videos about me teaching the young Bozozoku, or Japanese gangs in Japan. A lot of people want to hear more of these stories, and I get a lot of positive stuff on that shit. So let's dive into the dark side of Japan again, okay? So for today's episode, I thought I'd talk about my experience with the Yakuza, which I bumped heads into many times in Japan. And being a foreigner in Japan, for some reason, Yakuza stories are just like the most interesting, intriguing, mysterious aura of an amazing, like, part of Japan. Even though, like, a lot of people think Yakuzas are cool and that they, I don't know, like, a lot of people fucking fanboy over Yakuza because of manga and anime. Like, what was it, the Anime Man, a famous YouTuber, he just did an interview with the Yakuza where he's basically pissing his pants the whole time he interviewed him, asking the dumbest fucking questions he could. And obviously fake in a lot of aspects. If you guys want to go watch that video, you can see it. If you don't believe me that it's fake, basically think of it this way. He, like, has the Yakuza obviously try to become more badass and aggressive towards him, like telling him to straighten up while he's in front of him, while he's slouched, acting impolite, which a Yakuza wouldn't do unless he's like the bottom of the barrel grunt kind of guy, which he could be. But, what was it? Like, you didn't tell me your name, he says at one part, and it's like, obviously they told each other their names, because in Japanese culture, before you do a shoot, you introduce yourselves and things like that. Like, there were some things that were fake about it, let's put it that way. And most Yakuza, they, even if they're an ex-Yakuza, they don't want to be in the spotlight for at all. So, whatever, that was dumb. But, me living in Japan for a huge chunk of my life, I've run into Yakuza a lot and heard a lot of good stories. So where to start? Let's start with like the stories. So to me, I love hearing Yakuza stories ever since, I think it was somewhere on the Joe Rogan podcast, they were talking, maybe he was talking to Rampage Jackson or something, but they talked about the Pride days, like the Japanese UFC where these American and other fighters would come to Japan. And Pride was all run by the Yakuza, so everyone pretty much bumped into the Yakuza, whether it was a party or them throwing girls at them or coke or whatever. And I forget who told the story, but basically one of them were saying that they went underground. They went into a club or something in Japan and they went fucking underground to this giant, like, bat cave of a place. And some Yakuza guy was, like, throwing girls and drugs at him or whatever. And I wish I knew what number of the Joe Rogan podcast that was, because I'd love to listen to it again. It just sounded like an amazing, crazy Japan experience, because that was all about that underground. If you ever saw Drift Hunter Albo on YouTube, before he was Drift Hunter Albo, the first video I think he put up about drifting was me and him going into the mountains of Guma and talking to people drifting around the mountains. Initial D style, and I was the whole cameraman for him the whole time. I remember him getting pissed off at me because I was late or something for our meeting in a big fucking fight. But anyways, yeah. So we were in the underground drifting scene. I was in the underground MMA scene. I was in the underground host scene where you were serving bars for girls that pay to drink with you. I did a lot of shady shit. Or as I like to say, a lot of fun shit in Japan. But I heard some crazy stories while I was there. And one of the coolest, or not coolest, but craziest Yakuza stories I heard was, and I can't remember who fucking told me it either. That's a dumb thing, but I think it was a model actor friend of mine. And he told me, oh yeah, I think it was this guy named Chuck. And he was a big black guy and he was a bouncer, or his friend did, bouncing at a Yakuza party. And it was one of the kingpins of the Yakuza. And basically what happened was, he was told to stay at the door and monitor and make sure no one gets in. Monitor. Yeah. Guard, basically. He was a bodyguard. Anyways. It's been a while, right? Since I did a podcast, I'm fucking tripping over my own words. Also, by the way, I apologize for not having a video this time if you're watching on YouTube, but I screwed up my right wrist at the gym and I can't do anything. I can't even fucking jerk off properly. I have to do it with the left hand and be like, oh, about to climax, switch hands, oh, the pain. And the pain kind of ruins it, you know? I'm just joking. But anyways, yeah, I'm left-handed for right now, so I can't operate my camera. My place looks like shit still anyways, so just enjoy the beauty of my voice. So where was I? Yeah, so he was a bodyguard for this Yakuza party, and he's telling me, like, all these people would come in. The guy's sitting there on his throne. It's his birthday. People are coming in. They're giving him fucking gold bars, tickets to Hawaii, throwing girls at him, like, crazy shit. The guy's just getting the most expensive presents you could think of. Like, whole suits made out of Gucci and shit. And he's like, there were just tons of rich people and gang members all around him. There was a girl, all the girls were serving drinks were like model, like beautiful girls, just naked, not wearing anything at all. And the crazy part that he told me was during the event, I guess they were passing out like a plate of Coke and the girls were doing the Coke. Everyone was doing the Coke. And if you know anything about Japan, if you do any drugs, it's like minimum of 10 years in prison with like $100,000 fine. But this is the fucking Yakuza, so they can do whatever the fuck they want. So they're serving these like plates and people are doing lines. And I guess one of the naked girl servers was coking out. And he told me like the Yaks just punched her in the face cold, knocked her out cold, and then threw her in a garbage can out the back, like those big garbage cans, or just threw her in the street, I think he said. Like, think of that. A naked, beautiful model girl knocked out naked and thrown in the streets. They didn't give a shit if she was going to get raped or if she was going to get killed or whatever. They were just like, poof, disposable shit. That's how fucked up the Yakuza are. They treat women like shit. Money is just for fun. Like, it's a big fucking thing. Not to say that they don't throw good parties. But yeah, that was a wild story he told me, and that just blew my mind. And being young, I was like, oh, that would be cool. Like, oh man, like, to be there and see that. But dude, if they just punch out a naked, beautiful girl because they can get whoever the hell they want, and that's just disposable to them, so are human lives, and you wouldn't want to piss one of them off. Which brings me to my next story. And this was a funny story by some, again, he was probably a model in Japan, but he was telling me this story of him and his buddy were drinking and they were walking down an alley and there was this well-dressed man and they bumped shoulders with him. And I guess one of his drunk buddies ended up pushing him after that and was like, watch out, you fucking idiot. And as they're going down this dark alley, they come out the other end. And there's a fucking old man in a full, like, mafia-looking, like, you know, pin, not pinstripe. I think they said it was just black, but this suit. And then behind him are, like, all these 20-year-olds with fucking boards of, like, wood and shit. And they get the shit kicked out of them. Like, 10, 20 guys, I can't remember how much he said, but, like, at least 10 guys come behind this old man and beat the shit out of the two guys. And he told me he woke up and they had nothing on them. They were robbed completely. They were knocked out cold. And then their wallet was missing. Their phones were missing. Everything they had in their pockets. And they're like, what the fuck? What are we going to do? And they're panicking in the street. And then they're just like, fuck, well, I guess we got to just go to the police or something. So they start walking back down the alleyway again. And they get to the street and there's a car. And that old man is waiting there and he throws their shit on the floor and he goes, don't do that shit again. Like, that's a like fucking crazy story. Like, you think that they would just kill him, but the Yakuza isn't about just killing people. Like, they're an organization that like to remain hidden. But if you disrespect them, you're going to get the shit kicked out of you. And luckily in this story, they gave the stuff back to them and gave them off with a warning. And then they kind of took that shit and they're like, yeah, we hurried home after that. But those kind of revenge stories. Even in Motley Crue, I remember reading Motley Crue's autobiography with The Dirt. And Nikki Sixx, the bassist, was talking about they were in Japan. And he says he slept with a Yakuza's wife. Which to me kind of sounds bullshit, but maybe it was like the lower Yakuza again. Because they have grunt guys, just like the Hell's Angel in the West. There's the Hell's Angels that have the jacket, and they're the top guys. And then there's the guys that don't have the jackets yet, and they're just trying to impress everyone to get into the club. So Yakuza has that as well. Mostly younger members. All of the top, or people you could actually call a Yakuza, are usually old men that have been in the industry for a long time and kind of acquired their way up to the kingpin. That's also why I don't believe the anime man guy is actually a Yakuza. He's involved with the Yakuza, but he's not a true member. And if you see any pictures of the Yakuza too, they're all fucking like over 50 guys too. Just like anything, whether it's comedy or whether it's just a fucking small business or whether it's the police or whatever, always seniority shows rank. So all the old people are always at the top. And the young people are always the pawns in the game of chess. So where was I? Oh yeah, Nikki Sixx. So he said he slept with a Yakuza girl. And then he said he woke up in the morning and some guys went and took her. And next thing you know, his like, I don't know, $5,000-$10,000 watch he had, because hey, he's a fucking rock star and he wastes his money too, was missing. And he's like, oh, the revenge of the Yakuza. Like that kind of shit probably happened. But these Yakuza stories are fucking crazy. And here's the biggest bomb I'm going to drop on you guys, because I don't think anyone has ever publicly said this. And if I go missing, hey, you know what happened to me, right? So here's a legend in the entertainment industry in Japan. There are very few Western people that have it big in Japan. There's my buddy Dante, or as some people know him as DC-san, with my friend group, who is the Black American guy who is in all of the SoftBank commercials. He's one foreigner that's made it in the business. And another foreigner is the guy in the Navi Time, which is a GPS company or big thing in Japan. But this one Italian, I think he's Italian, guy is like the face of the company, and in every commercial everywhere. He's on billboards, you know, he's big. So to get big in Japan is kind of like becoming big in the West. It involves a lot of luck and a lot of being in the right place at the right time. So Dante, for example, too, I remember a couple other Black friends of mine that were in the entertainment industry. They're all like, we went to the same audition. So he just got picked and he got the role and he's very lucky. Now, Navi Time, I heard a different story. And this is where it gets crazy. So the Navi Time guy, his son supposedly had a run-in with the Yakuza. And one day, they threw him off the top of a skyscraper to his death. And again, it doesn't sound like something a head-up Yakuza would do. So it's most likely a grunt guy that got into a fight with him and said, fuck you, I'm Yakuza, threw him off the building to his death. And so what happened was this Navi Time guy got the job and all of a sudden gets popular and he's making really good money right now, which is very rare for anyone that's not Japanese in the entertainment industry. So one rumor that someone told me was this is because this was the head Yakuza guys basically saying, we're sorry that our subordinate underling killed your son and this is the only way that we can repay you. Of course, it's not giving you your son back, but hell, you're going to live really comfortable for the rest of your life. And that just blew me away when I heard that. I was like, that is a fucking crazy story. Like, man, it has everything in it to make like a whole drama episode of some fucking hit TV show. But I never met the Navi Time guy, but after hearing that, man, I felt bad for him. Like, that's fucked up, but it explains like the entertainment industry as a whole in Japan, like how shady, fucked up it is. Even Beat Takeshi, who now we know is popular in the West for movies like, I think he was in Mortal Kombat recently, as well as in Ghost in the Shell, the American make. And of course, Extreme Elimination, Beat Takeshi's Castle, all these shows that made it fairly big in the West. He's one of the most prominent Japanese celebrities, and he used to be a really famous comedian. And in Japan, now he's a movie star because he's playing a lot of Yakuza roles in the Japanese movie industry. But a lot of people actually think that Beat Takeshi is Yakuza. And to me, whether he's Yakuza or not, he's still fucking badass. And if you ever notice about his face, it's really different and kind of a little messed up compared to most Japanese people. And the thing about him is why he has that face is he actually got into a motorcycle. Yeah, that's what we call it here. In Japan, we call motorcycles bikes. How confusing is that? I rode my bike to work today. Oh, you rode a bicycle? No, my bike. Sorry, that's just a Japan thing. It's stupid. Like, literally, if you say bike in Japan, that means motorbike, not bicycle. Bicycle is jitensha. So, I don't know, just a Japan fact. Take it or leave it. But yeah, Beat Takeshi, he got into a motorcycle accident, and he needed surgery on his face, so how they repaired it ended up like that. Maybe not the best job. Maybe he should have went to Korea. But that explains why he looks like a human-frog hybrid. yeah, people say he's Yakuza, and you know what? I kind of think he probably is, because he climbed into the entertainment industry. He has his fingers in every pot that he, like, every cookie jar you can think of. So, only time will tell, I guess. And now, those are kind of some of my Yakuza stories, so let's get into my experiences. So, if you're a foreigner living in Japan, the odds that you'll ever see a Yakuza is like one in, I don't know, pretty much a million, most likely. That's not even that bad if you consider how many millions of Japanese people there are. But you actually interacting with the Yakuza is pretty slim. Unless your hobby is the same as mine, which is jujitsu and mixed martial arts. Because with Yakuza comes Bushido. And a lot of people often confuse what Bushido means, but to me, and many Japanese agreed, Bushido is, I think it translates as the way of the warrior. But in my eyes, what Bushido is the respect, the honor, the camaraderie you get through martial arts. And that's a short definition of it, but it's basically the honor and respect and the way of the warrior that you have with working with your fellow man or woman. So when, like I always say, like when I'm doing martial arts in Canada or Japan, everyone in that dojo is my friend. Because when we fight with each other or we're sparring, I trust them with my life. To an extent. So even in Canada or Japan, all the people in my dojo, we would go out, we would train 5 hours a day, we would laugh, we would share stories. Sometimes I would hang out outside of work, but a lot of the time I didn't. But they were better friends than the friends I had, if that makes sense. Just because of that relationship in the dojo. It's hard to explain, but I hope you kind of have an idea of what I'm trying to say here. But in Japan, a lot of the time when I did MMA, there would be, out of a class of 20, two or three people that when we're changing our gi, they would take off their gi in the back room so no one would see. And if I was in the back room changing as well or something, you would see. They were fucking head to toe covered in tattoos. And a lot of the head Yakuza, they'll have tattoos from their neck all the way down their arms, complete sleeves. The not so high up Yakuza will have them down to their bicep about. Like, so they can still wear a short sleeve business shirt, pretty much. But main Yakuzas have it all the way down. They have their whole front chest. They have their whole back. They even have their dick tattooed. Usually like a koi fish. But also it's a Japanese penis, so like a minnow or something. A goldfish. But, yeah, so I would see these guys undress with me in the locker room, and they were fully tattooed. And every time you could see, they're looking at me. They're wondering, like, oh, what is he going to think? And they thought it'd be awkward, but, I mean, to me, I was just like, whatever. But when I first started training in Japan in Osaka, there was the underlings too, and the underlings, you can tell, I knew it was an underling and not a full Yakuza because he had tattoos up his neck. So Yakuza hide their tattoos. These guys did not give a fuck. He had it like under his neck. One guy had it like on his face. And I'm like, okay, these are underlings, but they're gonna fucking, I don't want to fuck with them. And at that time, I think I was a purple belt in jiu-jitsu. And I don't know how many years in of MMA I was, but I was good. And I just beat the shit out of everyone in that class except for the black belt guys. And I remember beating the crap out of these guys with their tattoos on their neck and their face, and they were not happy. They didn't talk to me. They didn't give me any respect like any of the other Japanese people. And I distinctively remember doing a triangle choke and forcing this neck tattoo guy to tap out. And then he got up and he was like, let's go again. And then they're like, oh, time up. And I was like, fucking thank God, this guy wants to kill me. He probably like stabbed me mid roll. And I remember after that, I fucking ran home. Like I was just like, not that I'm scared of him. I mean, I kicked his ass, but I was like, I'm not fucking dealing with this guy. I'm jogging, I'm running, I'm bolting fucking home after. And then I don't know if I'm going to come back the next day. But I ended up coming back, and I don't remember seeing him again. One thing I noticed with Yakuza and MMA is there's a lot of pride, a lot of ego. And I don't think I've ever met a Yakuza that was higher belt than like a blue belt. Probably because in their mind, they were like early Canadians and Americans in UFC where it's like, I just want to fucking bang. Where's the knockout? Fuck this jiu-jitsu shit. But yeah, there was a couple of those underlings for sure in Osaka. I don't think I met a Yakuza in Osaka doing jiu-jitsu or MMA. But when I did end up meeting them was in the countryside of Guma in Japan. And one guy that looked like a really nice little tiny Japanese guy. He was a skinhead. He was older, maybe 50. And I really liked him because he always made jokes and he looked like Matsumoto Hitoshi, one of the greatest Japanese comedians ever. And so I really liked him. And then one night we were doing our jiu-jitsu, we're changing in the dojo, and I don't know why I never saw him change before. I think it was mostly because he would always come in. That's right. He would always come in late. And I always thought that was weird. Because it's very not Japanese. Most people always come early. And I always thought it was weird because he'd always come in late, he'd change, and then he'd join the class. But I guess one time I came in late or he came in early and we're changing, I saw, boom, full Yakuza tattoo. And I was like, holy fuck, he's Yak. Did not see that coming. And every time, like I guess he was pretty dedicated and he was older, so he wanted to get good at martial arts. And he was friends with everyone. I liked him too. I'd roll with him and I'd help him with jiu-jitsu and everything. And yeah, I just kind of forgot that he was Yakuza because he was just so nice and calm all the time and unlike a lot of them. And he was starting to call me Joshua Sensei. Like, Joshua Sensei, can you help me with this and stuff? And I was like, don't call me fucking Sensei, bro. I don't want to be any more closer to you than I am right now. And It was fun. It was interesting and scary and everything all in one. But I think we went down to Tokyo from Guma and we had this tournament and we were going to drink after and shit. And I was so pumped. But then my Japanese teacher, who was a black belt, was telling me, like, I'm not going. I'm not getting involved in that. And if you go, you're going alone. And I wouldn't recommend it, JJ. And I was like, oh, fuck, if you're not going, I don't want to go alone. Because as close as I was to that guy, and I can't fucking remember his name either. It was like Maru-san or something. But as close as I was to that guy in the dojo, I still knew he's Yakuza and he does shady shit. And as close as I was to him, he never got personal with me like he would to some of the other Japanese members. And by personal, I just mean like talking family or talking about let's go drinking or something. He always kept a certain distance away from me that made me feel like he didn't want to become any more than just the dojo friends. And maybe it was for the better in hindsight. But the other time with jiu-jitsu that I noticed a guy was this buddy of mine who I'm still friends with on Facebook, but I've never talked to. I think his name is Mamoru-san, which means like protection in Japanese. But a fucking cool name. I fucking love that name. Mamoru. I'm Mamoru. Just sounds like a samurai or some badass warrior. And I actually met him. Oh shit, the cops are after me if you can hear that. Nah, I'm just joking, but I have my windows open right now so that my mic quality is better because my room is pretty empty and it echoes to shit. But going back, sorry, I get off track a lot. I met Mamoru at the gym in Guma, and I was working out, and I think I was bench pressing about 130 kilos at the time. I was pretty fucking buff. And he saw it, and he was a power builder too. Fucking jacked. The most jacked non-bodybuilder Japanese person I've ever seen. Like, he must be doing roids, but he was jacked. And he just talked to me, and he was really friendly, and I talked to him, and I was like, oh, yeah, shit, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, I'll give you, I'm doing these squats. Can you help me with this? And I was like, oh, yeah, sure. And he seemed like a really cool guy. And I was like, yeah, I'm doing jiu-jitsu and MMA. And he's like, oh, really? What club are you going to? I'll come and check it out. And I was like, okay, sure. And then somewhere in between that, he took off his shirt. Full tattoos. And like the other guy saw he had a full tattoos, but this guy's tattoos were like faded. Like, come to think of it, I think he was probably in his 60s or up there because he looked older, but he was jacked, like better shape than a 20-year-old. But his tattoos look like they've been in there a long time. And I was like, okay, shit. This guy's gonna kill me. But weirdly enough, he was also a white belt. And the day that he said he was gonna come to my club, I don't think I was able to go there. But the next day I went to my club, my teacher was like, did you send Mamoru down here? And I was like, oh yeah, how was it? And he was like, good, but yeah, don't invite those kind of people again. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, did you not see his fingers? And I didn't really pay attention to his fingers. But usually Yakuza people, if they leave the Yakuza or something bad happens, they cut off their finger. We all know that, right? But what happened with Mamoru was, my teacher was explaining, he had three fingers on each hand cut off. Which means he did some really fucking bad shit in the Yakuza and they had to cut off all those. Or he left and came back like six times, which is unlikely. So in other words, he was a really bad motherfucker. And then I didn't hear from him for a while, but then my teacher and some other high up black belts were laughing one day and I was like, oh, what's up? And he goes, oh, you remember Mamoru? And I was like, oh yeah, yeah. Did something happen? And he's like, yeah, he went to every dojo, including ours, paid the drop-in fee, which I think for our dojo was like $100. Yeah, it was $100. Yeah, he paid for the month, sorry. He paid for the fucking month for some reason. So he paid $100 to drop in. And he went to like 10, 20 dojos in all of Guma and paid the drop in of $100. And my teacher was like, yeah, you don't have to pay that. And all the clubs were like, yeah, you don't have to pay. You know, the first time's free. And he's like, no, I'll pay. Which is a very Yakuza thing to do because it's showing respect. And, they're just laughing like he paid $100, dropped in, then went to another dojo, paid another $100, dropped in, and just went around. And I guess he was just looking for the best of the best. I don't know. But he was a white belt, so it's kind of like, what the fuck are you trying to do? Like, learn. And, yeah. He just gave a bunch of money away trying to find his right dojo. And then he went to fucking Brazil for a bit, and then he went to Thailand for a bit, and now I think he opened up a club in Tokyo. And somehow he became a black belt in a year, which is very garbage. I bet he fucking paid like $1,000 to some Brazilian to get a black belt and probably suck shit. No, I'm joking. I hope he doesn't hear this and I die. But yeah, he was a badass motherfucker. I'm friends with him on Facebook. Never message him. His Facebook profile is him flexing with all his tattoos right in front of the camera. He does not give a fucking shit. He's a badass and... part of me is like, I want to party with this guy because I feel like you'd be king for a day. But at the other time, one slight pissing off of this guy, he'd probably end up with one finger lost, but you'd end up with everything lost. Just a really crazy, crazy person I met. And then, of course, in Tokyo when I lived there, because that's where I lived for most of my time, most of my life. In Tokyo, I've met some Yakuzas and... I'm thinking they're bottom because they were kind of pieces of shit. One rule we had in one of the Tokyo MMA dojos I was in was no head kicks when you're sparring. So when you're sparring, you can throw punches, light punches to the face, light punches to the gut, whatever, like kicks to the leg. But the one rule was no head kicks. And this one guy, he wanted to go all out with me. Like, his face was like he wanted to kill me. And we're sparring, and the fucking first thing he fucking does goes for a head kick on me. Luckily, I put my arm up, I block it, and then I fucking clock him as hard as I can in the chin. And then my fucking teacher comes up and he's like, Joshua, JJ, what are you doing? And I was like, I just threw a punch. It wasn't my fault. He went into it. And he's like, no, you can't do that. Light. And he gave me shit. And he saw the guy head kick me and he didn't give him any shit. And that's when I kind of clicked and I was like, my teacher is fucking protecting my ass. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry. And the yak kind of held his jaw and he was like, oh, I don't know, whatever. And I was like, fuck. But, I didn't put up with any of that shit. Even with jiu-jitsu, people would go in and they would go so fucking hard. They're yanking on my arm. They're trying to put heel hooks on me, which are also not allowed because they can fuck your ankle up. And they're doing it full of pressure and shit. And I just kicked it off and I'd end up like trying to halfway choking them out of just fear, pure, what is it? Not adrenaline, but more like I wanted to kill them because of the disrespect almost. And luckily the teacher kind of stopped me every time. Not saying that I'm like out of control when I do this shit, but with the guys putting on heel hooks and guys trying to head kick me, especially in my Canadian dojo, Cobra Kai, we have this feeling that, you know, you got to be put in your place or else you're going to keep doing it. So that was my idea, but my teacher was just like saving my ass. Thank God in hindsight. But it's a crazy world. And the other time, kind of bumping the yaks a little bit, was in the entertainment world. So hanging out with Japanese directors and Japanese movie stars, and they're in the background always. Oh, and then of course, being a host. So in one of my previous podcasts, I talked about being a host and how I was... that what seems like a wonderful job where you're getting paid to talk to girls and they buy you drinks and you drink for free and you get paid for it. It does have that underlining Yakuza culture as well, where they come in and you have to serve them and take their shit. When I was a host, I never had Yakuza, I don't think, but my boss was always saying they come and you'll bump into them eventually. But one day I wasn't there and my buddy, who was an American, and I didn't want to become a host by myself. So I joined the host club with him. And one day he was working and I had my day off and he messaged me and he was all scared shitless. He's like, JJ, fucking today was crazy, dude. I mean, I'm not going to go back. And I was like, what do you mean you're not going to go back? Let's go back tomorrow. It's going to be fine. But he was flipping out because a Yakuza, maybe... another clan or something was there. But anyways, this Yakuza had this big fight, throwing guys into tables and shit, and then the police came. He's like, dude, the police came, and, you know, if they find us and we're not on the right visa, they could arrest us. And I was like, did they check your visa? And he's like, no, thank God, for some reason, the cops didn't give a shit. And I could just imagine, like, this white guy in the corner just shivering, like, thinking he's going to get deported all in the corner. And the cops just like, you're fine, you know, we just care about these guys. But in hindsight, too, if I was him, it'd be a pretty fucking creepy, scary experience. And even when I wasn't a host, I was chilling with hosts. For some reason, a buddy of mine was really good in Japanese and... connections, and he knew all the top hosts in Tokyo, and we would drink and party with them, and they would tell us some crazy yak stories too, like just yakuzas coming in and fighting the whole time. Another one of my buddies too, he was at a host bar, and one yakuza flashed his gun. Like, he was just like, I'm not even gonna fuck with you, look what I got, fucking back down. And I guess the guy ran out, and just crazy shit like that. But, Yakuza in Japan, man. No scary, no fun shit. It's all... I mean, there's a little bit, I guess. But as the anime man or any of these anime manga otakus think, Yakuzas are not good people. They do bad shit. There are pedophile rings. There are, human trafficking. there are like drugging up girls and making them sex slaves. They're not good people. And like this one thing I told people, oh, here's another one. Yakuza story too. I won't say the name, but one of my friends, she was telling me she was walking down the street one time and a big black van came up and three guys grabbed her and tried to throw her in the fucking van. And luckily she was with another guy and the guy fucking pushed them away, grabbed her and they ran away. But they literally tried to kidnap her. And she's a beautiful girl. She's also a model, but yeah, she was telling me this and I just couldn't believe it. And the other crazy Yakuza thing no one's hearing about, but is a big problem in Japan right now, is Roppongi, the popular place for foreigners to go and get drunk and get laid. Well, in Roppongi now, they have people roofing drinks and then stealing your money and leaving you in the streets when you wake up. And I heard two stories of this happening with people I know. One was a guy from New Zealand, a really nice friend of mine. And he was drinking Roppongi at like 2 a.m. And then he drank his drink, started to feel weird, and he was trying to get help, but no one would help him. And they were forcing him to sit down. And then the roofie kicked in, and he was trying to fight out of it. And some guy hit him, knocked his tooth out. And then when he woke up, his wallet was missing. And it was like 6 a.m. or some crazy shit. And after he told me that, I was like, yeah, fuck Roppongi. Because if you go to Roppongi too, there's a lot of big black guys from Nigeria. And they're imported into Japan by the Yakuza to be the face. Be the face of Yakuza, but to hide the face of the Yakuza so Yakuza don't have to do all the dirty work. So these black guys from Nigeria are getting people to come to their club. They're putting the roofies in the drink. You can see them in Shinjuku. You can see them in Shibuya. You can see them in Harajuku. They're all over in the main hubs in Japan, basically controlling the underworld for the Yakuza so that they can hide in the shadows. It's a fucked up thing. When I was a host, the crazy thing though, this is a fucking funny part. One of the funniest like things to happen to me when I was in Japan. So whenever I walked into Ikebukuro, which is a part of Shinjuku and known as like the shady district of Japan, sex shops, brothels, all that shit. Whenever you go into there, you'll always see black guys like, oh, you want a blowjob? You want sex? You want a girl? You want this? You want drugs? Every time you go down there, there's always going to be people. Come to my club. You want sex? You want drugs? Blah, blah, blah. Every night of every day, they're there saying that shit to all foreigners, all Japanese. And it's annoying. When you live there your whole life or whatever, it's annoying to hear these people every fucking day, every fucking time you're walking down the streets. But when I became a host, I went to one of them one time and he's like, yeah, come to our bar. Or do you want sex? And I was like, dude, I'm a host. I'm going to work. Okay, leave me alone. The guy shut up immediately, and then every day that I worked at the host bar and was going down that road, one guy would be like, oh, want to come to my bar? And the guy would put his hand on him, and then he's like, oh, sorry, go along. Like, they respected the industry so much that they all knew who I was in, like, a week's time. How fucking crazy is that? I just thought that was amazing. I felt like I was a Yakuza for a bit or something, like... There's that high level respect and regard, but the shit you have to get into to get that. Where was I? Shit. Nigerians, Roppongi. Oh yeah, and then the other story about Roppongi was this Canadian model that I met right before I came back to Canada. And a very beautiful Canadian girl. And we were on a set and she was talking and I was like, yeah, you got to be careful of Roppongi. I guess they have some shady shit down there. And she goes, oh, I already got raped. And I was like, what? And she's like, yeah, well, I don't know if I was, but basically I was drinking at night and then someone roofied my drink and I woke up in the alley without panties on. And I was like, that's fucked up. And I didn't know what to say to her after that. It was just like, shit. That's horrible, right? But her story even blew my eyes more open that it's still happening and it's that common. She said her friends went back and then she wanted like one or two more drinks and that's what happened. Like, you never want to be alone in Roppongi drinking. Let's end with that. Don't go to Japan and go to Roppongi alone and go drinking, or else you'll end up without panties and raped. Even if you're a guy, they'll take your brown cherry. So just stay out of Roppongi. But even though I say that, Roppongi's always going to be full. That's just how it is and always was. But as much shit as people give Ikebukuro... Oh, wait, I'm saying it wrong. It's not Ikebukuro. Fuck. What is wrong with me? It's, fuck, what is that place called now? I don't know why I always got it. I always got it mixed up with Ikebukuro because that's where I would do my live shows. Fuck, I feel like such a noob right now. Let's look it up. I'm drawing a complete fucking Kabukicho. That was it. It's Kabukicho, not Ikebukuro. So for anyone that actually knows what I'm talking about, I apologize that I sound like a fucking noob. Ikebukuro, you have good shopping there. And they have a lot of sex brothels. I never been to one. But they have that. But it's not Kabukicho. Kabukicho is the shady part of Japan. I apologize, everyone listening. You think I would know, but... I've been fucking up those two ever since I realized what they were. Big mistake, but luckily I realized it. But yeah, Kabukicho, even though it's known as like the shadiest part of Japan, it has a lot of Yakuza, it has a lot of the host clubs, it has a lot of the sex industry. Roppongi is where you're going to get roofied, most likely. Actually, I wouldn't drink in Kabukicho either, but... most people, they go to Roppongi, and that's where all the fucked up stories are from. And yeah, that's Yakuza stories and my experience with the Yakuza in Japan. I mean, there's a couple more probably in there. I just can't think of them right now, and I gave you the gist. And we're running almost up on an hour, so I'm going to end that talk there. But since this is a podcast, I wanted to talk about a couple other things, like the craziness of the news. Of course, we have the coronavirus still a big issue, and Japan, the numbers are going up, and they're fucked, and then their prime minister just gave up, and if you're Japanese or you're any foreigner who lived in Japan, you're just like, yeah, that's another prime minister. Japan switches prime ministers like Amy Schumer switches tampons, which is like 5 a day, or so it feels. I mean, Japan, no one gives a shit about politics. No one gives a shit about their prime minister. Suga, who is the last one, is a piece of shit. And then he just quit because he can't deal with coronavirus. And then the next guy that's coming in, no one gives a shit about either. So when it comes to politics, Japan is one of the worst places to give a shit. And that's just the reality of it. So the corona numbers are going up and they're going to continue to go up because no one's taking it serious. But in Canada, oops, sorry, I got the hiccup there. In Canada, just the other day, I heard yelling of people outside and I thought that Canada won another gold medal in the Olympics. But no, what it was riots, not riots, sorry, but protests in the streets and outside of hospitals, Canadians protesting the vaccine and human rights by not wearing masks and in the thousands outside hospitals. Now, this is a weird thing to talk about on the podcast because it's either A, you're against it, or B, you're for it. And I'm kind of a C, I'm in between. And I don't want to get into all that because, I mean, it ends up just people hating you if you're against their opinion. But what I'll say is, I don't mind that they protest the vaccine, but I do mind that they're not wearing a mask and gathering in thousands because that would spread the virus. And I mean, we can't deny that there is not a virus. There is a coronavirus and we do have to still treat it. I mean, even if you think it's a fucking cold, I don't want your goddamn fucking cold. So wear a mask. Because I mean, the masks, I don't know if they originated from Japan, but Japan, we use masks even if we're like a small cough or a small fever. And it's just a polite way not to give it to someone else by coughing and throwing your spit into the air while you're sick. So masks, I don't know why people hate them. To me, it's a normal thing, maybe because I lived in Japan for so long, but you're not gonna die and you're not gonna have health issues wearing a mask, so fucking wear a mask, guys. And that's just where I'll leave it at that. So we're having protests and we have our apocalypse now in Canada. But you know what's pissing me off even more? is that people are flipping out about the vaccine passports and this, but then for every day in the last 2 weeks, I'm seeing shit on solar tsunamis, and basically, it's in the fucking news. Look it up. It's crazy. There's solar tsunamis, like Fukushima 5.3, 2.0 times 10. But instead of water, we're having electrical current that's said it's going to shut down all the internet in the world. If that happens on top of the pandemic, holy shit, is this going to be like the worst 2-3 years the world has ever had in certain ways. Or that's how everyone's going to feel. Even though it's not the Black Plague and we're piling up our families' bodies on the sidewalk, the loss of the internet, some people will compare it to that, as stupid as they are. But yeah, this solar tsunami, it's interesting. It's kind of like a dream apocalypse. If all the internet went out, people would stop fighting. We would go and have to walk to our friend's house to talk to them. You know, without internet for 2 months or 2 years even, it would change the way the world works quite drastically. And it might revert everything back to how it was 20, 30 years ago. I mean, especially with comedy, it would, because then you have to have people coming out to talk shit about you to your face and try to cancel your comedy to your face, to which you just fucking pimp slap them in the face, and then they wouldn't have the balls to go around and spread it like they would on Twitter. So maybe it would shut up these cancel culture bastards in a way. But in any case, hey, loss of internet would suck, but at the same time, maybe what we need. And then the other big thing in the news that blew my mind was China's 1 hour of gaming rule they put out. And now they're going to talk about having facial recognition to make sure that it's you and not you pretending to be your parent to get more playtime. So they're going to take your facial recognition and make sure you only play 1 hour of games, or maybe that will be even 1 hour of TikTok or Instagram. And I'm just like, holy shit, could you imagine if we did that in the West? Like, there'd be no entrepreneurship. Like, shit would just go fucking bananas. And in a military point of view, if Chinese people have to go into the military and train, and academically they have to do all this academics, and they're playing games all the time, yeah, you know, you're going to have different levels of IQs and physical strength or whatever. So China's conforming their people and trying to make super soldiers in a way, and by limiting their 1 hour of Warcraft a day. Seems impossible to many people, I know, but that's what it seems to be going towards. But yeah, I just thought that was crazy. And if we implemented that into the West, how fucking you'd have people picketing way worse than they are for Corona. Huh. All the gamers I know, man, no way they could do 1 hour of gaming. This is crazy. What do you all think? Let me know in the comments down below. That's crazy. And then, yeah. What else? There was a Rick and Morty live action trailer with Christopher Lloyd from Back to the Future, which if you're a Rick and Morty fan, you know that Christopher Lloyd and the Back to the Future franchise is what inspired Rick and Morty. So that was fucking cool to see. But a lot of the taglines are saying that it's for a Rick and Morty live action movie. And if you watch the short clip they put, whoever's playing Morty is not that great, and the quality was kind of shit, so let's hope that there's not a live-action film. But that being said, seeing Christopher Lloyd as Rick was fucking badass. I love that. And if they did do a live-action Rick and Morty, goddamn, take my fucking money, because that would be badass. As long as they get the old writers. The new Rick and Morty season 5, I'm one of those fans that sees the downgrading of writers and shit quality, and I'm not a season 5 fan, let's say that. In other entertainment news, we have Shang-Chi that I think is already out, isn't it? Hold on, let's get my Jamie up here. Is Shang-Chi out? Release date September 2021. So does that mean it's out? Whatever. The point about it is Shang-Chi is destined to fail. And the only way that it can be saved is if the action in Shang-Chi is Jackie Chan level, no quick cuts, full-on fucking panning badass, old boy style fucking Hong Kong badass action film. Because if you're going to be like a martial arts superhero and make a film, in my view and many action fans' views, that better be some goddamn good action. But knowing Marvel and all their crappy directors, except Waititi, who did, well, Thor Ragnarok is probably the best Marvel movie out of all of them, I'd have to say. Story-wise, directing-wise, everything-wise. If Shang-Chi doesn't do the martial arts, then it's probably going to be a big-ass flop. And what's funny is actually the guy that plays Shang-Chi, the Asian actor, is a Canadian guy from Toronto who was doing tricking with a buddy of mine, Albo from Drift Hunter, and that's his friend. So maybe I'm closer to Hollywood than I think recently. But yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Shang-Chi. I hope it does good. The Asian in me is screaming and cheering for it. But if it doesn't have that good of action scenes, kind of feel robbed. It would be like if there was a Thor movie and he didn't use thunder or his hammer. Or if Captain America became Captain Ethiopia. Yeah, if it was a Captain America movie, but it was a new guy called Captain Ethiopia and he was fighting injustice for food. That would be what a Shang-Chi movie with shitty action would be. But in any case, it will probably do like Wild Speed and sell millions in China and not so much in the United States. Mark my words, that's what it's going to be. But all right, guys, this is one of the longest podcasts I've done for a while. And it's great to be back to an hour. And for all the people that wanted to hear more about teaching Japanese gangs, I hope you enjoy the real stories of the Yakuza, because that's some shit that I haven't made public. And if I die, you know why. And you can donate to my Patreon so that maybe I can buy a nice gravestone. I don't know. But yeah, it's good to talk to you guys and share some war stories. And I got so much more. So if you enjoy this shit, put a thumbs up, leave a comment. I know there's a lot of fans of the podcast and you're not commenting, and those comments really help the channel. We just hit 6,000 subscribers, so thank you very much. It means a lot to me because taking out the Japanese... I was doing Japanese comedy reaction videos for Japanese music artists and shit, and Japanese fans were really loving those. But they weren't doing good in the West, and reaction videos, let's just say they're not my thing. And there was a lot of foreigners copying my style and looking retarded, and I kind of looked at their videos as a mirror, and I was like, I look retarded, so I don't want to fucking do reaction videos anymore. So I do my podcast, and I do this stuff with you guys, and I enjoy it. And reaching 6,000 subs without having to do shit that I don't want to do feels kind of good. So thank you guys for all your support. Please leave a thumbs up and hit that subscribe button and leave a comment with some positivity for crushing the BTS army and all those losers and fighting for good comedy and your free right to speech and shit. So if you're not a communist and you love me, help a brother out, please. All right, guys, thank you so much. That is Some Dumb Gaijin, the Yakuza version. Keep safe, peace and love. Peace.